Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is
Aaron O'Brien.
We are here today to talk episode, was it six? Of Star
episode
Trek
six.
Discovery.
Absolutely. Episode six, we're talking Lethe. That's the name of this
Lethe.
Episode.
Lethe.
Mm-hmm. Lethe is a river in Hades in the underworld, and it when you drink from it, it makes you forget. So it means faulty memory or just oblivion. So,
lots of interesting layers.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. Obviously I think they're referencing more of Sarek's, you know, feelings towards Michael Berman's character.
That's interesting.
I mean, there's probably more than just that as well. I mean, you have the whole the captain and the admiral issues.
Oh yeah, that's going on as well. But before we get to our non-spoiler thoughts, at the end of the last episode, you mentioned you are in a Kickstarter for your comic Return to Snakeland.
Yes,
and you said you've got an update on that.
Yeah, we've actually made our goal. We're a little over our goal now. But if anybody's still looking for to maybe get in on this comic, we're only going to do a limited printing of this comic. So this is, you know, if you do donate, we have T-shirts, we have stickers, and we're doing stretch goals too. We'll be doing extra things as well to basically, you know, sweeten the pot a little more. But it's a graphic novel that I've been working on for quite a few years now, and it's going to be a really awesome book. So definitely if you check it out, go to Kickstarter, do a quick search for Return to Snakeland, and you can find it there.
And this deals with real-life-ish type stories of murder, death, all sorts of
yes.
crazy things that have happened in real life.
Stuff we don't really talk about here on Synthaholics with Star Trek. This is this is more like urban myth and true crime as well. So
it's very very cool, very fascinating stuff.
If you want to find out more, you can probably go on to the Nerdynomicon. There's a episode called Snakeland where I lay out everything on that. So
yeah, that's a couple episodes ago, and you were on another podcast talking about that too. What was that?
The Devil's Due.
Yes,
I was on
Devil's Due
last week. Devil's Due podcast. They do a lot of comic book talk, and they talk a lot about the character Daredevil in that series. But yeah, we talked about my projects. We even talked about Synthaholics a little bit as well.
Oh, awesome! I haven't had a chance to check that out, but I definitely will. But I saw that you'd posted that. So just to let everyone know, yeah, if you want to hear Aaron in a non-Star Trek setting, you've got two other podcasts to check that out on. Return to Snakeland information on both the Nerdynomicon and on the Devil's Due.
I do get around.
That he does. You should see it.
Oh, no, you don't want to see it.
Yeah, the clap's hard to get rid of.
man, you went there.
You know, anything.
All right.
Okay, so what were your first initial reactions on Lethe?
Yeah, this is a interesting episode. It's funny we're talking again about the relationship between Michael Berman and her adopted father, Sarek, and also the mental health of the captain of the Discovery. So it's an interesting episode in a lot of ways, but I think we're getting more of a psychological profile of some of the characters, but I don't know if this episode really pushed anything plot-wise. you know.
I don't think so either. Like, Discovery, like, for them saying, oh, we've got this, like, you know, 15-episode strong arc storyline, like, they are being very Star Trek-y, way more Star Trek-y in their episodes than I thought they would be being. The war seems like a backdrop instead of, like, an in-your-face mm-hmm. thing to this. Like, it's very different than what I thought the Discovery was going to be from all the ways they were pitching it. And yeah, I don't think it advanced the plot, but I think it's finally a Michael Burnham episode that we're getting, because like the last couple episodes haven't really been Michael episodes. They've been more Lorca episodes. And for a show that was also like, oh, the show's not about the captain, it's about this other character, Discovery's been feeling very much about the captain, which I don't mind. Yeah. I absolutely adore Lorca. Everything he does is amazing and terrible at the same time. So I don't complain, but I felt like Michael was a bit of an empty character so far. And I think, you know, Martin Green is doing fantastic with the role. I just don't think that she's been given a lot as far as in the writing goes. Like, she had this backstory, and then she's just kind of been existing on the Discovery. I mean, she's come through some breakthroughs in science, but it's like, I feel like it's not all about her. You know what I mean? I feel like she's just part of a cog in the machine, more than like it's all about her. This episode gets back to Michael, I think, and we learn more about a backstory. And I think I started to like her more in this episode.
Yeah, she's she's got that whole Vulcan facade, so it's kind of hard to enjoy her because she's got that cold demeanor. But here we're seeing her maybe break into more of her human side. I think we don't normally get to see.
I think that's going to make her a lot more likable going forward if she keeps that. But yeah, it was a good episode overall. Maybe, I mean, probably not my favorite so far of the series, but the preview for next week has got me giddy. The preview next week looks like it's a standard, typical, like, really big problem of the week Star Trek, like you'd see in TNG or TOS or something like that. I cannot wait for next week's episode. That is extremely exciting looking.
Yeah, no, it looks great. And actually, the ending of this episode, I think that's where things start picking up, too. So you got a different, which I won't give away what happens at the end of this episode, but it definitely gets you like, whoa, what's going to happen next?
Oh, yeah. Every episode, they've been very good about like sticking it to you, where it's like, oh, my God, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? What's going to happen?
Yeah, definitely. Okay.
It's hard to talk about the episode anymore without getting into spoiler territory, so... You want to take it away?
Let's move into it. So if you have not seen episode 6, definitely turn this podcast off now.
Unless you're still choosing your pain about
choosing
spoilers.
Choosing your pain and you don't care. So like I said, we said this episode is Lethe. This is season 1, episode 6, airing October 22nd, 2017.
Today!
Today. Wow.
We're recording
it
today.
A little bit. Oh, yeah, it'll be a little bit later.
Today, as of the recording. It'll be later as of when you hear it, but it's exciting that we're talking about it today.
Yeah. So here, our first beginning, we get a picture of Vulcan where we have Sarek jumping on some kind of ship, and he's got a helper ambassador friend with him.
A whipping boy.
And the whipping boy is like, what's this all about, this mission? And he's like, it's better if you don't know anything. And once they get onto the ship, they start flying away. And when they're far from Vulcan, his friend looks like he's doing some is
heroin.
Being suspicious.
That is, yeah. He's trying to get the ultimate high.
He shoots himself up with some kind of chemical, and then his veins start glowing, and it looks like he's going to explode or something's going to happen. And he gives him the whole live long and prosper symbol while saying that the Vulcans should stay pure and they shouldn't have anything to do with the humans or anything else for that matter. And he's basically calling the Federation a failed experiment.
He's a logic extremist. I feel like this should have come up a long time ago. I mean, they've been like had their hands in Earth for almost 200 years at this point. Mm-hmm. Like, this seems like it's coming out, like, really late in the game as far as, like, you know, being involved with humans and the Federation. I know the Federation's a newer entity. They're only, like, I don't know, 90 years old at this point. But,
I don't know. I do feel that, I do feel like in Enterprise, there were a couple, Vulcans that were very much, like, they didn't want to have anything to do with humans. And they thought it was just a huge mistake for them to even be dealing with the humans and everything they're doing. So
sure, that's why I thought the logic extremists should have been kind of dealt with a while ago. It seems like it would have come up before now. You know what I mean? It's interesting that it's still happening, but it just seems
maybe
like
they're just sick of our meat eating stenchy bodies. So
that very well could be the case. What did you think of that ship? At first, it didn't strike me as very Vulcan, but then I did realize there was like an oxahedron ring around it instead of like a circular ring. So like it's sort of Vulcan-y.
Yeah, I always feel like there's kind of like, you know, wing it with Vulcan ships. I mean, the only time we really saw really clear Vulcan ships was in Enterprise. Everything else has been kind of just weird.
But yeah, there were always phalluses through circles.
Yeah.
And so they had a very distinct design. And at first, I thought this looked like it was something out of Firefly. It looked weird. But then when it started moving, I could see it got a different angle. You can see, like, there was, like, a squarish circle around it. So I'm like, it's sort of following with the design aspect. I'm like, hmm.
Well, like I mentioned, Sarek's buddy decides to blow himself up. Sarek, at the very last minute, puts up some kind of shield and seems to contain the blast, but the ship is knocked out of warp, goes flying into some kind of nebula, and that's where it kind of ends the scene. So we don't really know at this point Sarek's fate and what's going to happen with him. The next scene we get is we have Tilly and Michael Burnham running through Discovery, and Michael Burnham is giving her kind of like mentoring notes of how to become an officer and how to basically become somebody of note in Starfleet if she's going to be a captain.
Giving her captain help for the future. And there's a nice little Enterprise Constitution class name drop in this conversation.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So, and she basically mentions, like, you know, if you're going to be on a Constitution class and be the best of the best, you know, you have to do all these things. And, you know, Tilly's kind of giving the, well, I think my personality will make up for all this other things, you know, that I'm lacking. She goes, everyone who's, you know, applying for these positions are going to be smart. They're going to, you know, be in perfect shape. You know, you have to be, they don't take in consideration your personality. Mm-hmm. So, which was interesting. And then next we get the scene of them going into the mess hall. With the mess hall, there is Ash Tyler, Lieutenant Ash Tyler is having lunch. Tilly kind of thinks that he's hot because he killed like 6 Klingons. Michael Berman's kind of
don't believe
dubious.
Everything you hear.
Yeah. And they sit down. It seems to be that Lieutenant Ash Tyler is a little more interested in Michael Berman's character than he is with Tilly. So, which is interesting.
According to everybody, she is why he was in a Klingon cell for 7 months. So, I mean, like, if anyone's got, like, a beef with Michael, I would think it would be this guy. You know what I mean?
Possibly. Or maybe Mr. Ash Tyler is just a little... Maybe he's not too careful what he does, and he got himself caught.
That's true.
That's a joke. I don't know. We don't really know how he gets caught. And we have our theories of what's going on with this guy anyway, so...
Absolutely.
He's a spy.
He's either Vok or some other sort of Klingon plant. I'm convinced. Everything about his backstory was so... Like, in the last episode, was so, like, suspect-sounding. Oh, 7 months, huh? Oh, you're sleeping with the Klingon Laurel, huh? And how are you not dead? How are you not bruised?
They gave you a gift bag, huh? Just seems weird. While they're in the mess hall, she gets a strange message or calling from Sarek through his Katra. Basically, she realizes that Sarek's dying, and Michael Burnham falls down, and she passes out. And by the next scene, we have her in sickbay, and while they're checking her out, she basically kind of comes to and explains what's happening to her. With, explains how her and Sarek share a bond, and that she believes that Sarek's in trouble.
And I love how the doctor's like, I can't do anything.
Yeah, just nothing wrong with her.
Nothing wrong. She's fine. Well, but that was a big exposition dump that she did for everyone around. So that's kind of interesting. Them kind of telling what the bond does. It's got a healing factor. She's like Wolverine now.
Yeah, right. Well, next she's Lurka basically says, "Well, I will, you know, make sure we can find Sarek." And the next thing we have Lurka calling some Vulcan.
Oh, I love this scene so much.
Yeah, some Federation Vulcan admiral or higher up, basically saying, "Yeah, we know that, you know, Sarek needs rescuing," and the Vulcan higher up says, no, don't rescue him.
We need authorization if we can send out a rescue." I'm like, really? You need like to go through like red tape to rescue someone in a time of war? That seems weird.
And
especially
and just goes
an ambassador.
Yeah, and then Lorca just basically says, "Hey, well, that's it. We'll be picking him up. See you later." And the guy was like, "Wait!" And then he hangs up on him.
Everything. Lorca does something every episode that I love, and this was fantastic.
Yeah, well, Lorca definitely, as we see more and more, Lorca is definitely playing by his own rules and might be a little bit crazy.
Well, he's definitely got something wrong with him, and I think that's kind of the requirement of being in Section 31. I'm still going to harp on that Section 31 theory.
Yeah, well, that's definitely the case. Something's going on with Section 31 in that place. Well, they're making their way to find Sarek. Like we mentioned, he's in a nebula somewhere. They have Lieutenant Ash Tyler and Michael Berman and Tilly are going to recover him. We have a brief little interface between Stamets and everyone making a science-y talk of how they could connect with Sarek and try to
an electronic mind meld or like a Wi-Fi mind meld.
And apparently,
Stamets is a completely different character now.
Yes, he is.
He is super peppy and happy instead of grumpy. It's very strange.
Yes. Apparently, Discovery can't go into the nebula. They're with their spore drive. Apparently, the nebula and the spore drive would just make a complete explosion, which is unusual. I don't know how that would work.
Really? Mushrooms and gas create explosions. That's weird.
That just seems like a bad cooking experiment.
Very bad.
But anyways, so they're going to take a shuttlecraft. And like I said, Lieutenant Ash Tyler, we have Michael Berman and Tilly are all going to take off. And they're going to basically use this device to try to amplify her Katra connection with Sarek. And they're going to try to get him to turn on his homing beacon on his ship so they can track him and rescue him.
An interesting thing happened before they took off. Lorca's like, not one scratch on her. And he's like, okay, I'll make sure the shuttle's okay. He's like, no, I mean her. It's really interesting, like the connection, like the protection he's got over her. And I'm interested to see where this goes, like why he's... I mean, I know he's like, she's an asset, but I mean, I still feel kind of iffy about it. Like what exactly his true motivation is, and I think there's going to be more to it.
Oh, you got to know Lorca's playing some angle, so there's something going on. So after they take off and they're going to search for Sarek,
the search for Sarek.
Saru calls up Lorca saying, "Hey, Admiral Cornwall wants to talk with you. She's she needs a." Whatever, he assumes that she's trying to talk to him through
subspace.
subspace, and basically says no, she's here and she wants to come aboard. So he's like, all right. And so Cornwall comes and talks with Lorca, and they have a very candid discussion how she's very worried with him and how he actually is, because he keeps on breaking the rules. He does what he wants. And basically, with him just being tortured, literally, I don't know how she said, like a week ago.
Yeah, it was about a week ago, I think she said.
you know, you should, you know, and you're just back in the seat, like, no problem. And she, in, you know, he's like, what are you talking about? I'm fine. You know, I'm just, this is a war.
I passed every test.
Yeah. And she's like, well, I'm trying to, you know, talk to you as a friend. And he's like, ah, you want to be my friend, huh? Let's have some drinks.
He pulls out a big old bottle of scotch. That's great.
Yeah. And from there, they have a couple drinks, and then they go to bed.
Sexy time. So. But you got to take off the badge first before you can sleep with your subordinate. That was great. I love how, in all Star Trek, it's like the badge goes when you're getting ready to sleep with somebody. If you're sleeping with an alien you're not supposed to sleep with, the badge goes. Harry Kim does it. Everyone does it.
Yeah, right. It's like, this is when the uniform comes off. But, yeah, it was... it's very strange that the Admiral would actually do this. You know, here she has an issue with Captain Lorca, and then she just, you know, reverts to having sex with him. I don't know. But seems a really bad decision.
It's actually, I think she's kind of, I mean, like, we'll be finding out in a minute. I think she's kind of playing him.
Well, yeah. She's playing him or he's playing her?
A little bit of both.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. But anyways, yeah, so from there, like you said, we have sexy time between those two. Back on the shuttlecraft, they're flying through the nebula. Did you find that the nebula looked really bizarre? Didn't look like a cloud. It looked just like weird shapes out in space.
It looks like a delicate. It looked more like the inside of, like, I mean, it didn't look exactly like it, but sort of like the inside of the wormhole in Deep Space Nine. Not the same look, but the same kind of look, you know, which is all this, like, random stuff flying around everywhere. It looked cool.
It looked interesting. It just didn't seem like that typical nebula like we saw in, you know, Wrathicon and in countless Voyager episodes where they fly into nebulas.
It's just like gas. Well, I guess it's more charged gas particles because it was jostling their ship around quite a bit, unlike the other unlike other nebulas that we normally see, where it's just kind of like, oh, it's just cloudy and it's messing with our sensors.
Right. So Michael Burnham puts on this, whatever you want to call it, psychic boosting machine, and she's trying to connect with Sarek. And she keeps on coming into Sarek's connecting with him, but she's coming to a moment where she was supposed to be accepted to the Vulcan, not the Academy, the Expeditionary team. Force. Right. And she should have passed this with no problem. They have this, she keeps on running into this conversation between Sarek, Michael, and Amanda, her mother, and how Michael Burnham's character was deemed unworthy by the Vulcans. And, Amanda is kind of like, you know, how can this be? She passed all the tests. She's awesome at everything. And, you know, Sarek is like, she didn't make it with the Vulcans. And Michael Burnham's, you know, wants to leave. She feels embarrassed or humiliated, or I'm not quite sure the exact feeling, but she just doesn't want to be in that area when this is all happening. And she keeps on coming up as an outsider. The Michael Burnham today is seeing this all transpire. So this is an event that happened in the past, and she keeps on coming up to them, and Sarek keeps on seeing her and pushing her away from this memory. Like, get out, and then she just flies away.
And they always do some Vulcan martial arts before he kicks her out.
Yeah. They do some Vulcan martial arts.
No food throwing, though, which I thought was kind of strange. I thought that was, like, the pinnacle of the Vulcan way, throwing food.
Yeah, I guess not. Maybe there just was the caterers didn't show up yet.
Damn! Slow caterers. It's the logical thing to show up late to a party.
We're so hungry. Next, we get the scene where the Admiral Cornwell is in bed with Lorca, and Lorca's back is facing her, and she sees that he obviously was tortured or branded of some sort because there's scars and different shapes on his back.
They put like a delta on his back. The Klingons know they like their deltas. So here's one for the flesh.
Just look like a triangle. But She goes to touch it, and Lorca, who's asleep at this moment, flips out, spins around with his with a phaser pointed right at her, and she grabbing her neck. And she's like, "What the hell is wrong with you?" And she says,
I knew there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, I knew something was wrong. And he's like, "Look, you know, maybe I fudged those psych tests just a little bit, just so people wouldn't get it, you know, get scared of me. But like, I had to do these things.
I'll be good, I swear. Just I'll get help. It'll be fine."
And she's like, you know, after this, you know, it's just, basically she's going to find somebody else to command the Discovery, because she's saying the Discovery is one of their most important ships during this war, and they can't have, you know, Lorca being all crazy.
Well, I feel like she's kind of taking back what she said last week, because last week she was like, "Well, we don't want you to do any more jumps until we tell you to do jumps," and now she's like telling him the opposite. I felt like I was like, "Huh."
Well,
it's almost like they were trying to take Discovery out of the front lines last week. Now she's like, "Oh, you're supposed to be in the front lines," and I'm like, "Didn't you tell me to hold back last week?"
Well, I think they're trying to hem him in, and then he keeps on busting out, because basically with the tardigrade issue, you know, when they got Stamets to start doing the jumps, notice they did a jump and they didn't even mention how Stamets been doing it.
They didn't. He's just getting higher and higher and higher, and he is a happy person. I like how he mentioned speed, like in that conversation earlier. It's like, "Oh, kind of like speed." And Michael was like, "I was thinking more like adrenaline, but yeah, whatever." I was like, "Yeah." I think Stamets is becoming a drug addict.
he's definitely enjoying himself.
He did say he wanted to talk with the spores. He is talking a lot with his spores lately.
Yeah.
I love the change in character, though. I love how he's just like, he went from super grumpy. Now he's like, "Everything's cool." It's like the Lego movie. Everything is awesome.
I don't know. I'm thinking maybe I should do some mushrooms. But Cornwall said, you know, basically, you know, this guy augmented himself. Your Stamets augmented himself, did a genetic, you know, alteration on himself so you can use the spore drive. You do whatever you want, even when it's against orders
and regulations.
And you have a mutineer who's out doing whatever she wants, you know. So she's like, all these things. And then this last thing, when he pulls the phaser on her, he's like, "Okay, so you're definitely out to lunch. So we're going to do something about your command." And Lorca kind of pleads to her. He's like, "Look, this is all I got. This ship is all I got. You can't take this away from me." And she's like, sorry, Charlie. That's it.
I'm like, "I don't know if this is you or if you're just trying to play me." And he's like,
Yeah. So anyways, that's where that ends. Next we have multiple tries from Michael to reach Sarek. And finally there's an interaction with Sarek and Michael saying, "Why do you keep fighting me? Why do you not want me in this memory, and why do you keep showing me this memory?" And he's like, it's like it's not about you. It's not like I felt that you're a failure. He says, "I'm looking at my failure." And he shows her what happened, that basically the Vulcan Expeditionary Council, or whoever they are, said you can only pick one. You can pick Michael Berman or Spock to be in this, because we're not going to have two non-Vulcans in the Vulcan Expeditionary Force. And so he had to make that decision, and he chose
Spock. But Cybok's okay to join. Cybok's okay to join. He's a full Vulcan. He's okay. He's over there, you know, feeling his feelings, but he's a full Vulcan. He's fine.
Cybok's just out there doing his hippie shit.
I love how they never mention Cybok. It's like everyone, like, Michael's like, "Oh, I'm great. I'm Sarek's greatest disappointment." Spock's like, "Oh, I'm Sarek's greatest disappointment." Why isn't anyone ever talking about Cybok? Cybok's got to be the worst.
Cybok. I hope Cybok shows up at some point.
I would love to see young hippie Cybok. It's like, show me your pain.
So hard.
I want to see him on his, like, space horse.
Yeah. Maybe he's not about pain. Maybe he's all about pleasure at this point. It's show me your pleasure.
Show me them big bitties.
Oh, Cybok.
That's what Cybok's all about in his young days.
calling everybody Herbert. Anyway.
Oh, man. I do hope Cybok shows up. I just want to see how disappointed Sarek is in him.
It'd be funny if Sarek just left the room and just hear it when the door closes. Fuck!
Oh, that'd be great.
He just can't even handle it anymore. All his children are a big disappointment to him.
Absolutely. It's the sad thing is it sounds like he likes Michael the best, the one that wasn't even birthed from him. That's how the show's making it seem like she's the favorite. It's like, I can like her because she wasn't really mine.
Not really mine, so I don't have to worry about it. So at this point, Michael makes that connection, and Sarek, after he reveals that it wasn't her that he's feeling, you know, ashamed of, or it's himself that he feels ashamed, which is strange that he says, I feel shame, but he's a Vulcan, so why would a Vulcan feel shame? Anyways, all of a sudden he's wounded, and there's a piece of metal sticking into his side, and he's bleeding.
I think it's about where the Vulcan heart is, or maybe that's on the other side. I can't remember what McCoy said. I think it's on the wrong side.
But nonetheless, Michael says, show me how I can help you. And, you know, she does a mind meld with him. And then she gets him to engage his transponder on the ship. And Sarek presses that, and then the shuttlecraft can hone in on him and find him in the nebula. They retrieve him, bring him back, but they're like, look, Sarek is way too weak, way too messed up. He cannot be making this meeting with the Klingons to, you know, make any peace arrangement. And from there, Admiral Cornwell is going to fill in for Sarek.
Oh, I love, because Lorca's talking to Michael, and Michael's like, he's too weak to go. And he's like, well, Admiral Cornwell, sir, she wants to get peace no matter what. I'll give her the details. Oh, it's so great. Everything Lorca does. Oh.
Yeah. Well, real quickly, Michael Berman goes to talk to Sarek, and Sarek says, I don't remember anything that happened between us. And he goes, you remember, you just don't want to talk about it. And basically said, one of these days we're going to talk about it, but I can tell it's not today. But sooner or later, you will talk to me about this. And then she's like, I'll see you later, Dad.
I'll see you later. And then she walks away and like yells father over her shoulder.
Father. And next, she meets up with Ash Tyler in the mess hall again. And Tyler basically is talking to her about her feelings about Sarek. And she says, you know, how she's angry, but she still feels love. And, you know, all these other different mixed emotions, basically.
Very conflicted.
And she's, I don't think she's ever dealt with these emotions before. And and she goes, what is this? What am I feeling? He says, this is being human. And Michael Berman then extends her hand and says, you know, hi, I'm Michael Berman. You know, kind of like, this is new me, emotional. So.
And he's like, we've met.
Interesting.
And she's like, have we? And it was a really cool conversation. This is where I think I'm going to start to like Michael more now that she's opening up more. Not that Vulcans are bad. It's just that, I don't know, like a human like holding on to wanting to be Vulcan so bad, it's been kind of hard to enjoy. But I'm thinking I'm going to start liking your character more. Going forward from here. Episode cuts back to Cornwell. Klingons double cross them like Klingons do. They're holding alien puppets in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
They drop the alien puppets, murder her security guards, and then they call up Cole. And Cole's like, oh yeah, you guys can join my party. I'll give you cloaking ships.
Yeah, you can all have cloaking devices. And we're kind of left with there. But then Saru comes to Lorca and says, hey, Admiral Cornwell was taken captive. You know, should we go get her? He's like, let's wait on that and get a green light.
Yeah, we need to make sure, you know, this isn't a trap. And that
I don't want to get in trouble like I did last time.
Cornwell was just yelling at me for rescuing Sarek. I guess I should take her advice this time.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think we should do it.
Yeah, just go contact Starfleet and let me know what they say. And so he's like, oh, okay.
Saru's like, okay. Like, sure, boss.
What? Oh, this is great. And, like, I was basically saying, like, oh, at least he's doing what, you know, she asked him to slow down. He's doing exactly what she asked him to do.
And then we have
in her time of need.
Yes. And then they have a scene with after Saru leaves, he's in his room, his quarters, Lorca is, and it pans down and you can see that he has the phaser still on his belt. So he hasn't changed. He's pretty much the same guy that she got freaked out by. And as we can assume, Lorca is using this as to his own advantage.
My get out of losing my ship card. Yes.
Yes. Dave, your feelings about this episode?
Well, like I said at the beginning, we both kind of felt like it didn't really advance, like, the war story forward. This is very much a Michael growing as a character episode, more backstory, and then learning how damaged Lorca really is. And we knew he wasn't quite right in the head, and we're learning even more about that, but I don't like the way Admiral Cornwell was like, oh, the torture and stuff, it changed you like a week ago. But I don't think that's what changed him. I think Lorca's been this way since we met him, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe killing all his people did it, but I don't even think that did it. I think Lorca was always this person, and she's just now seeing it after however many years that they've known each other. I think Lorca's always been this person. I don't think he's changed the way that she's like, oh, you've changed. I'm pretty sure Lorca's always been this way, and he's just been better at hiding it in the past.
I don't know. Do you think that? Because, I mean, maybe people do change, and maybe she mentioned, I think, his injury when he got injured with his eyes. She says she mentioned that when you got injured, that's when things started. I started noticing you change. So, you know, maybe he, you know, some people get damaged, and they – you know, especially people who've been to war or seen some kind of warfare, they their mentality changes completely.
But didn't he hurt his eyes when he blew up his ship, though? Like, I thought that was the same incident.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, like that's why I think he was always that person. Because if he was willing to blow up that ship, or he's been that person as long as he's been involved with Section 31, which we don't know for sure if he is, which I believe he is, but we don't know for sure, and we don't know if he has how long that entanglement has been.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. What about you?
Well, going along with the Lorca thing, did you notice, we didn't mention this in the synopsis, but did we, how we had the, holodeck,
it was
testing
like,
thing?
It was like a wannabe holodeck, because it wasn't emitted from the walls. They had like special small little emitters. They're like standing like basically in a tiny little like 6 foot by 6 foot by 6 foot cube. And everything getting projected around them. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
That, right.
Because I was like, why do they have holodecks? They're not supposed to have holodecks yet. Like, because, I mean, like, they were in Next Gen, they were geeking out about how, like, amazing they were.
Right.
So, I mean, like, and I like it that it wasn't a full holodeck. It was mostly just, like, a projected simulation. Which, since they've been showing holograms all over the place, it's not out of the realm of possibility that they have, like, a holodeck light.
Sure, good point. But during that, it looks like that Lieutenant Ash Tyler, it looks like he killed, I don't know, how many was it, like 80-some people?
I think it was 36.
Oh, 36, okay.
Because
Lorca said... He lied to Lorca originally.
Because Lorca said, I killed 24, and he's like, oh, I got 22. And then he walks around and sees it's like a lot bigger number. And he's like, I didn't want to make you feel bad, sir.
Yeah. Which is interesting on two things, because one, Lorca was like, you know, don't hide that from me. I mean, it's nothing. You shouldn't hide that.
Don't hide excellence.
Yeah, that you did better than me. And but then he also that Lorca, who is captain, isn't as good as his lieutenant or a lieutenant. So that's an interesting little thing there going on. And, you know, Ash Tyler walking around with a beard. Is that regulation?
Riker had a beard?
You know? Yeah, I guess. just seems unusual, especially during this time period.
I mean, facial hair. I mean, the only time we really see facial hair on men in Star Trek is Riker. I that's the only thing I can think of. Or Mirror Universe characters have facial hair, but
yeah.
I mean, I guess Decker had like the 5-hour shadow or whatever.
Yeah, but that's because he's crazy.
He's crazy. He'd been alone on the ship. He sent his whole crew to die. Like, he's broken up about it. Lorca is not broken up about his crew dying at all.
No.
Lorca's chill with it.
Absolutely. But then he offers Lieutenant Ash Tyler basically his security officer's position. And I was like, man, you just met this guy and you're just going to, like, let him in that quickly? You're like, you don't know much about this guy other than, you know, what you've read up on him. So.
And everything. And on the ship, he thought everything was really suspect. Oh, another thing we forgot to mention, the synopsis at the end, when they're at the Sarek's bedside, the exchange between Burnham and Lorca, he gives her a bridge position, a science officer.
Yeah, science officer, correct. Yeah, so that's right.
Interesting. Like, we're 6 episodes in, and now she's finally has a bridge station. So that'll be interesting to see how that goes on forward.
Which is also, Lorca just keeps grooming these people to be his little pets. So it's kind of disturbing because we keep seeing it. You know, here you got people like Saru. Saru seems a little naive, and we don't see him much in this episode, but he just kind of follows along with orders. He doesn't question orders too much. So, which I would think is not a very good first officer.
Well, he's trying to take the polar opposite approach to Michael, who, like, and in her last moments aboard the Shenzhou was very, no, I'm not going to do what you say, Captain. So he's very adverse to being like Michael at this point.
Well, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
He's diametrically opposed to everything that she stands for.
He's taking that to an extreme. Secondly, my other thought was that Michael Burnham's character's relationship with Sarek. Sarek just seems like a shitty dad. I know it's weird that he'd always expect Spock to be so Vulcan when he's half human. It's weird that you would groom a human into a Vulcan. I don't know what went wrong with Sybok. But, you know, Sarek just seems like he's just probably the worst dad of all Vulcan. I don't know.
Look, they called both the science minister, both called Michael and Spock his little experiments. And, like, they basically, like, made fun of him to his face about shacking up with a human.
Right.
I'm like, whoa. It's just like, Maybe he just doesn't want to wait for Pung Far. Maybe she demands more than a regular Vulcan woman would demand. He's like, yeah, I'm down for that. I don't have to wait 7 years.
I can do that. I don't know, but my feeling more than anything is just that Sarek puts his kids in these awful emotional, place. I mean, like, Sarek's way he treats Spock for up until the end of Star Trek IV. You know,
yeah,
he's a complete ass to Spock forever. I mean, other than Star Trek III, he comes to Kirk and said, you know, you have to save my son. That's probably the first time we ever see
like genuine Sarek. Care coming from Sarek.
Yeah.
But I mean,
after his son is basically dead thought to be dead.
But the nice thing is this episode shows why he's angry at Spock because he saved that spot for Spock because of Michael. And then he turned it down, so now he doesn't have any of his, you know, lineage, you know, doing the scientific expedition for Vulcan. So I mean, like, I like how this episode's filling in that point where, you know, he's upset at himself and he's basically taking it out on Spock.
Well, true, but I mean, it's his issue in the end. I mean, he made those choices, so Spock wasn't even ready to, you know, to apply for the Vulcan Expeditionary Force, so.
Which is weird, because I always thought Spock was supposed to be older than Kirk. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but
I always thought Spock was older. Like, a lot older than Kirk.
And, yeah, but maybe he just had a chance to do it.
I don't know. I figured, you know, Michael would be younger than Spock, not older than Spock. So I'm kind of confused that, like, I mean, I guess Spock's age was never determined, but I just always assumed he was older than Kirk, especially since he served on the Enterprise for years before Kirk was ever there.
It's weird because I just I watched this last week the original series, The Enterprise Incident, since we were talking about that episode on our last episode when we talked about because I wanted to check about the D7s that were in. There were D7s.
They were D7s. I did look up that picture too, so I was wrong. But I mean, I granted, like, if you've been a long time listener to the show, I'm not super up to date on my TOS. TOS is my least to watch series around the time, about the same as Voyager.
Well, anyways, that point being is Spock mentions to the Romulan commander that he had served Starfleet for 18 years at that point. So we're in the third season of TOS at that point. So he had been aboard the Enterprise or a part of the Federation for at least 15 years before that. So it would just basically be in the beginning of this whole, you know, battle of the binary stars that Spock would have been joining. You know, where Michael Berman would have been, you know, already on her way to become captain before she mutinied.
Yeah.
So she's a little bit older than Spock.
Yeah, I just thought that was weird. I always imagined Spock as being a lot older, but. But then again, this is also 10 years before TOS, too, so I also got to take that into account.
Right, that's my point. So, anyways, and just so everyone knows that there were D7s in that episode, and Spock does say that the intelligence saying that the Romulans are using Klingon technology. But in the remastered where they have the new CGI effects, they put two D7s and one bird of prey when the original had three D7s surrounding the Enterprise. So just side notes from last episode.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've seen the new Star Trek Continues episode, but that Romulan character.
Yes, she comes back.
She comes back in that episode, and it's the actress's daughter, and she looks just like her. If you haven't seen that.
I cannot believe how much she looks like her.
I geeked out.
Stunningly like her.
Like, especially the first time you see her on the view screen, she looks exactly like her. And then later on, there's different angles where you can tell it's not the same person, but damn, it looks so close. Like, the spitting image. And by the way, that episode of Star Trek Continues was fantastic. It's tying all these little lines from previous episodes together. And
tying in your favorite TOS episode as well.
I'm not a fan of the galactic barrier, but I mean, even though they're going with that stuff, like, it's a fantastic episode. Check out that episode if you've not seen that. For Star Trek Continues, go watch it now.
Yeah, really good stuff.
Go watch the Enterprise incident and then watch this to have your socks blown off. If you're not a big fan of TOS, go watch the Enterprise incident and watch this. It'll make your mind melt.
Enterprise incident is actually not a bad episode. Anyways, going back to this. So Sarek, kind of shitty dad. Not really sure what Michael Berman can do about that. I mean, I think she even mentioned that she wants things from her father that he's just never going to be able to give to her. And, you know, she's disappointed in that, but she's all right with it. She's, you know, kind of coming to terms with it. So,
and I feel like she's finally not afraid to embrace who she is instead of trying to be who he wants her to be.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting to see her make this, you know, turning this corner as a character, and it's interesting to see how that will work out for her. But then, again, I just feel that, you know, Lorca using Lieutenant Ash Tyler as his head security and now using her as his science officer on the bridge, I think he's just grooming all these people, and I don't know exactly what for yet, but I think he's just like, you know, stacking his deck of cards before he, you know, starts dealing.
I think so, too. It's like, with her, I can definitely see, you know, she's a mutineer. His line, universal laws for lackey, context is for kings. Like, the way right. the way he presents, the way he views things. Like, I feel like he's grooming her to become Section 31, possibly. I don't know about if he's grooming Ash to become Section 31, because he's, like, even, like, I don't care what happens to you, just make sure she's safe. So, like, she is special in his eyes. So it'll be interesting yeah. to see what exactly he wants to do with her.
Yeah. Yeah. And we still don't know with Ash Tyler if your theory that he is a Klingon plant or something to that nature.
Or Vok, yeah. Nothing really was hinted in the episode, although every time he talks, I'm listening for things. And, you know, it's just fun to think about if he is a Klingon plant whenever he's telling Michael, well, just to be human. And it's just like, what's going on in his head where he has to say something so cringeworthy to a Klingon? You know what I mean? Like, as a Klingon, it's just like,
Yeah.
It's just fun to watch.
It is fun to watch, but I do, there were more than one occasion where it made me think, like, if this guy is a Klingon, I don't think he's Vok. I mean, maybe a Klingon operative. Who's disguised as human, but it'd be really difficult, I think, to Vok to make that change. You know, completely, like, that he can converse with a human and pass. You know what I mean? It's crazy.
The Klingon Turing test, the Klingon human Turing test.
Yeah.
I mean, it is kind of a stretch. Maybe they, like, along with their physical manipulation technology, maybe they have, like, you know, engrams they can implant,
like, possibly,
you know. So I mean, like, he is Ash Tyler. If they got Ash Tyler from the Battle of the Binary Stars, they kept him alive, they tortured him, and then they, you know, they were planning to use him as a plant. You graft his mental engrams onto Vok, so Vok can know he's from Detroit, he knows his past, he knows the Starfleet record, he knows how to speak English perfectly. He just grafts his implants onto him. That way, he doesn't have to take time to learn English. It's part of his mind now.
It's an interesting thought. I mean, there was a brief moment after they left their training exercise, him and Lorca, he brought up that his you know, he came from Seattle, his mother's from Seattle, and then he says, well, your mom, you know, was from outside Seattle, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, you know, kind of like, and he's like saying, I read up on you. And, you know, it could be like, you know, if someone asked me, you know, where do you live, I would just say Buffalo. But technically, I'm outside of Buffalo. I don't live in the actual city of Buffalo, you know.
Yeah.
But I would just say Buffalo because anybody outside would know the township I live in. So it was a weird exchange. I didn't know if that was a, you know, they're trying to tell you something, or it was, I don't know. It was strange that they threw that in there.
I didn't catch that part, I don't think, because I was having lots of issues with CBS All Access tonight. It kept, like, pixelating and stopping and starting and restarting. Like, it was like a broken record. It would, like, play parts over and over again. Some parts it would miss completely. So I think I might have missed that particular exchange.
Yeah, it was interesting. So, and then after he gave him the, you know, the position to be head security, he kind of, like, after Lorca walked away, Tyler just kind of gave a look as he walked away. Not as a sly look, but kind of like, it's hard to describe. It yeah. wasn't like it just seemed like maybe a look of shock or surprise, but it just made you wonder what was going on in his head. So
sure. And, you know, part of like, he may not be Vok. I want him to be Vok, because Vok, they seem like they set him up as a really important character, and then
Vok just kind of disappears.
And he disappears. And it just seems kind of weird. And what Laurel said, you have to give up everything. And to me, everything would be giving up what makes you Klingon, like your identity, your look as a Klingon. Like, that would literally be everything. So that's why I keep holding on to the hope that he is Vok. If he's another Klingon plant, I mean, I'm fine with it, I guess. But it just, Vok is such an important character. There's also the title card and the casting. I can't remember his name who plays Ash Tyler. but his name has been on the front cards for all the episodes, and he didn't appear till episode 5.
Interesting.
So yeah. I mean, and then the also the casting for the guy who plays Vok, he's got no background at all on IMDb.
Not credited. Yeah.
So it's interesting. I mean, like, and then, you know, the old casting news, they said that he was originally supposed to play Klingon, and then they're like, oh, well, you need to, and then his part changed to a Federation officer. I don't know if they gave away a spoiler and were trying to cover it up. Who knows? I mean, I read all these things and I took them with a grain of salt and I didn't put much stock in them. But then the way they talked last episode, he's been on there for 7 months. He's sleeping with Laurel, and just the little things. It's just like, I don't know.
I know. It makes you a lot of questions there. And I'm still going with my Lorca being Garth of Isengard. It's would be so crazy if that was true.
That would be pretty crazy. And Garth of Isengard did have mental disorder. So
Yeah. It totally would be. But I don't know. Like I said, this episode, you know, it was kind of a filler episode, but we got some background information on all our characters. So,
it was good. I mean, like, Star Trek, it keeps delivering. Discovery keeps delivering. This episode, maybe not as hard as other episodes, but it's a good, like, building your characters episode. And Michael desperately needed some character to be built. And it's good that they finally got around to building some character for her instead of just being this genius scientist who fixes people's problems. So that's nice. Getting Lorca's more of Lorca background and Lorca just being a dastardly evil dude is just also fantastic to watch. So, I mean, I can't be too hard on this episode. I believe it's necessary in the overall scheme of things.
Right.
And next week looks like it's not going to have anything to do with the plot either, because it's like, oh, the ship gets destroyed every 15 seconds or 50 seconds or something like that. And it's just like, oh, okay, it's like the classic Star Trek episode where they're stuck in some kind of time loop. I'm just like, interesting.
Yeah, didn't we just do this for TNG like a couple months ago? so we talked about that in Cause and Effect with Joe DePinto on episode 126, where big time loop. So it looks like we're going to get another time loop episode where they have to try to figure out. That's from what it showed us in the previews.
Absolutely. So that's interesting. And again, like I was saying at the beginning, they were touting this as a hard wartime story Star Trek. And they're not doing that. They're doing very Star Trek-y stories. Sure, there's an arc that's going to be able to be connected throughout. But these are very Star Trek-y stories that they're doing week to week to week. They had the moral issue of the tardigrade. Now you've got just the building characters. And then next week we've got the time loop episode. And that's very Star Trek-y. It's so exciting that this is as Star Trek-y as it is. And people keep complaining that it's not Star Trek-y. And I'm like, why? Like, are you watching this? It's very Star Trek-y.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, people complaining that it's not Star Trek-y are just, I mean, they're just sour grapes for one reason or the other. They're just grumps. I mean, honestly, like, we've talked about this over and over again, is that there's no way you could do this trying to go back to looking like Christopher Pike's days. I mean, it's just, it would be silly. So you gotta make this, you know, pump this up to today's standard. And yeah, we've made a couple changes, you know, like we said, there's hologram transmissions and stuff like that, but you know what? I can handle it. It's not, you know, it's not something that's so crazy that, it makes me go like, well, I can't latch onto this because it's not even close to canon anymore.
I mean, you know, holograms are old hat for Star Trek. I mean, in TNG, you saw holograms pop up every now and then in the first two seasons. Then they kind of cut it out because I think it was just too expensive. But I mean, they didn't act like it was like a new technology. They just had like stuff shooting out of Picard's desk in his ready room, and it was cool looking. I was like, I had watched it more recently, and I was thinking, wow, I didn't realize there was holograms because it, you know, just been, you know, forever since I'd seen season one or season two.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking that, I mean, I don't have an issue with the holograms. The only thing that does give me a little bit of pause is in DS9 when they have the hologram on the Defiant. They're like, oh, this is new. This is weird.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So that's kind of, you know, eh, but maybe that just went out of, you know, maybe it just phased out and they were kind of phasing it back in. Who knows? Everything old is new again, right?
Well, my just thing is, you know, you can't go back to a 50-year-old show. I mean, when I was on the Devil's Due podcast, I mentioned to the guys, you know, because we were talking about Discovery for a little bit. And I said, you know, it's like going back and making, you know, the Adam West Batman TV show again. I mean, after we've had, you know, Christopher Nolan's Batman, how do you go back and do, you know, Adam West Batman? Sure, we all love Adam West Batman, but it's not, you couldn't make that show today and have people actually take it seriously.
Oh, absolutely not.
You know?
Absolutely not.
It's and even if you try to punch it up a little bit, it still looks silly. So you're gonna have to make some changes and some roles with it. You know, it's gotta evolve, and we're seeing this evolve. And I'm excited for everything I've seen. There's literally been nothing that made me go like, this is not Star Trek anymore. Yes, the first two episodes seemed a little too shoot 'em up for me and a little like, you know, dark. But I think we're kind of like getting past all that. I mean, there's a darkness to this, like overarching darkness, like a cloud of something nefarious happening, but Lork we just don't know. Lork is a cloud
of darkness.
Right, right.
But yeah.
Anyways, I think it's a wonderful series, and anybody who wants to bash it, I think you're really discrediting yourself, because this is a wonderful fun show.
It is a wonderful fun show. Like I don't mind the physical changes to the Klingons. Right now, the only thing that bothers me about the show is that they called that Star Destroyer a D7 last week. I'm like, that's not a D7. It doesn't look anything like a D7. And I'm hoping it's right. Just that the Federation has no idea what it's called.
I don't know. It's hard to say.
And the writers and the producers have been saying that things that don't seem like they're canon are going to be answered. So I'm hoping the way Klingon ships look is going to be one of those things, because their physical features, fine. Maybe they're Klingons from a different place that we haven't seen before. Fine, I can get behind that. The makeup's amazing, so I'm all good with that.
Right. Just
the ships. Right. I mean, like, there's a design aesthetic, and the D7 is such a classic design. It's iconic. It's almost as iconic as the Enterprise.
Yeah, right, right.
And for them to call something that's shaped like a Star Destroyer a D7, I'm just like, no.
No. Yeah, they should have just changed that. That was silly that they you have plenty of people that could have said, no, that's not right.
Yeah, it just kills me a little bit inside that it's such an iconic ship. They could have called it anything else. Other than maybe a Bird of Prey or a D7, they could have called it anything else, literally, and it would have been fine. And, I don't know. I hope they address that, and I'm looking forward to a more Klingon-centric episode to get more of what's going on with the Klingons. But I'm guessing we'll get one soon, because with the Admiral being captive, it's gonna be interesting. They're keeping her as a live prisoner. I wonder if Laurel is gonna take to her.
I don't know.
Or if Laurel is still alive. I hope she didn't die from the her face melting, but we haven't gotten to hear back from Laurel yet.
Well, you sure she'll show up and she'll have her melted face for sure.
Or maybe like a Borg, like a big like metal plate on her face. Like we don't do bandages, we do metal plates on your face.
We just graft metal to your face because that's comfortable.
Because that's the Klingon way.
Yeah,
that'd be fantastic.
Oh my god. Oh man, it's funny.
I'm so excited for next week. It just looks like a really classic looking setup for Star Trek, and Harry Mudd's in it. I cannot wait. I wonder if Harry Mudd is the one who initiates the weird time displacement thing. That would be wild.
Yeah.
Absolutely wild.
We'll find out. It's going to be pretty exciting. I mean, we've got three more episodes before our break.
Yeah, I'm wondering how that the arc's gonna like finish out, because there's got to be something mind blowing at that last one, because they had to have been like, oh well, we're switching from 8 to 9, so I guess they were probably finishing editing, and they were mm-hmm. thinking that maybe the cliffhanger didn't happen till episode 9, so they were like, okay, no, we're doing episode 9 as the, you know, the mid season finale. So I can't wait to see what kind of craziness they're gonna throw at us.
And it's, I'm sure there'll be some bizarre, crazy, seat of your pants cliffhanger.
So, random thoughts I have about this episode, or just the series in general so far. The Black Badge has only been brought up once in episode 3. I can't say that I've seen one again.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
And then that Mira thing with Stamets, they didn't even address it. Stamets was barely in the episode this week.
Maybe he's just tripping balls.
Maybe. You know, I think, and the way he's acting in this episode, it does seem like he is definitely altered. He's an altered person. Maybe the real Stamets is in the alternate universe, and the alternate universe Stamets is the nice one, and he's super nice and high. I mean, who knows? I don't know what's going on. Either he's done a body swap with his mirror universe self, or he's really enjoying being on the shrooms. He's like, yeah, once you get used to getting stabbed, it's all fine and dandy. I wonder if they're just going to build, like, implants into him so, like, that he can just take the stabbing without having to, like, get penetrated every time. Like, through, like, yeah. You know, just, like, build them into him. Like, you know, the Matrix thing in the back of your neck? Like, just build them into his sides. Just, like, implants.
I would imagine that'd probably be a smarter idea.
Than getting, you know, fresh holes dug every time.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that would be very, very comfortable. I mean, obviously, you're in that technology era where you could probably get that patched up pretty quickly, but...
Sure, but, you know, I took fencing for a little while when I was in college.
You and Sulu?
Yeah, me and Sulu. Yeah, it was a shirts off kind of affair, but when...
I bet.
Anyway, in fencing, when you're fencing with a foil... there's a ratio of bending that is mm-hmm. that you know, basically if it bends a certain way, that means
what Sulu says too.
Yeah, if it bends a certain amount, that means you've penetrated the flesh 2 fingertips deep. I mean, so instead of your fingers lengthways, like if you put mm-hmm. your first 2 fingers together and measured across that way. Mm-hmm. That's as far as it needs to go into the body to puncture a vital organ.
Mm.
And those spikes on the tardigrade machine,
like your prostate.
we're not talking deep. We're not talking deep. You know, from your hand to the tip of your finger, we're talking across the fingers. So that's as far as it needs to get into your body to cause damage to a major organ. It's what's considered a kill in fencing, and those needles are a lot longer than 2 finger widths wide. They're like mm-hmm. they're like 4 or 5 finger widths wide.
Mm.
So I feel like those things would kill a person if that's going into you like multiple times on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just thought that it was interesting. Just from my fencing days, that I was like, you know, this is what's considered a kill shot, and that's only. It's not very deep. You know what I mean?
Right, right. No, I understand. Absolutely.
And then I'd bend over and Sulu would just have fun. But, you know.
Yeah. I personally don't understand why you have to stab the person to actually make it work. Why can't you just have some kind of, you know, I don't know. It just seems weird technology, but what the hell do I know?
The mycelium's got to get into your bloodstream, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, can't you just spit into a vial and that's it?
You should just, like set up some IVs and just, like, let it plug your arms instead of, like, plug your sides.
Or maybe just, you know, get, you know, I'm not going to even say it.
Oh, you're talking about a suppository?
Well, that, or maybe they give him a little fleshlight action or something, you know, and collect his DNA that way.
No, I think the spores have to go directly into the bloodstream.
Oh, you're right. They do. Maybe suppository. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe he likes it that way too. I don't know, but he could be a top.
It's possible, but I mean, just or just into the arms, whatever. It just seems like getting stabbed into the side. It just seems unnecessary. Maybe they'll figure out a better way later.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, or just how about just like something he like, you know, puts in his mouth for a minute and like it mixes his DNA with the spores. I mean, come on.
Well, another random musing that I haven't touched on yet, as far as the series goes, is the tardigrade hookup. His partner told them they were making these crazy, leaps with the spore drive. And he didn't mention how. Like, how would he not be mentioned how? They have this big interface that didn't find the tardigrade and built that overnight. You know what I mean? It seems like it would have been, at least a couple days to figure out how to build the thing, how to interface it with the tardigrade. Or maybe it wasn't originally intended to interface with the tardigrade. We haven't been told. But I just thought that was a strange, musing thing that why didn't his partner tell him? I mean, I know he didn't find out from the records because they said the records on the ship were damaged. So right. He couldn't find out that way. But why wouldn't his partner, who he worked with on this technology for such a long time, tell him like what they were doing to make it work? I just feel that that's kind of odd.
Yeah, that they wouldn't be exchanging notes back and forth. Yeah, that does seem odd, too. Don't know. It seems the whole thing seems a little weird, you know, that they would get that far and then he wouldn't have the tardigrade and they would, you know, but it's not really explained.
No, it's just some random musings that I'm just trying to think of that I hadn't addressed before that I wanted to get your thoughts on. I think that's it for myself. Do you have any?
No, this episode just seemed like a character building process. I mean, there wasn't a lot more other than Admiral Cornwell being taken captive and possibly Lurk losing his command of Discovery. So.
Well, her getting captured is a problem solved. Well, there, he can wipe his hands and hope she dies. And
all righty, then. Wipe my hands of this.
It's like, wow, that's super convenient. I can send her in the harm's way. Or I can get...
When they brought that up, I was like, oh, Lorca, you're just going to send her, aren't you? Oh, you are.
You are a magnificent bastard.
He is. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh. I mean, it was a perfect casting Jason Isaacs because he plays such a great bad guy. And, it's still up in the air whether or not he really is a bad guy or not, I think. I mean, like, he's definitely on the side of bad, but he's working within the reins he's been given.
Yeah, I think he's bad.
It'd be nice if they pulled a switcheroo where he wasn't really bad. Or maybe he does have a redemption arc. Maybe it's even more his redemption arc than Michael's at this point. Who knows?
I don't know. We'll find out, though, definitely. But I definitely think we'll see. Like I said, I think he's stacking his deck before he starts playing his cards. When he does, watch out.
Yeah, I think the first arc is him stacking his deck, is getting Michael to where she needs to be, getting Ash where he needs to be. And I'm hoping the Ash thing's going to bite him in the ass. Because having him as a bridge officer, that's exactly where a spy would want to be.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
So it's something like something, you know, it's he's got to build up. And then the last six episodes are going to be how that unfolds. I'm hoping at the end of that ninth episode, we'll get an idea of what his plan is. And that's the thing that's going to blow us away.
Yeah, for sure. Well, or he comes into the ready room with the Tribble and then Tribble goes crazy.
Yeah. Oh, that would be a great way to end it. Like he comes in the ready room and there's the Tribble there and Ash is there and it goes crazy and that's the end. That would be fantastic. Yep. Oh, yep. Man. Yep. It's almost like the Breaking Bad, like Hank going to the shitter and finding the book.
Yeah, oh yeah. Absolutely, just like that's my point.
Oh, that'd be a great ending. For the mid-season thing. But we haven't seen the Tribble. The Tribble was not there at the last two episodes.
No, but those homemade fortune cookies were.
Oh, I had Chinese today. I actually posted my fortune cookie to the Facebook group.
you will die horribly.
It was something to the effect of, borrow money from a pessimist. You won't expect it back. And I'm like, that's so a Lorca fortune cookie, if I ever heard one.
They should definitely make Lorca cookies, but they should make fortune cookies that are like have like the worst fortunes possible.
I don't know. I feel like most fortune cookies I get have like the weirdest sayings in them. I always call them misfortune cookies because they're so bizarre. I mean,
you will lose a finger in a knife fight.
It's like, no. Why will I be in a knife fight?
I don't know.
The next girl you bring home will take your kidney. It's like, no.
Oh, man.
Leave you in a bathtub filled with ice. I don't have any kidneys now. Damn it.
Not again.
Oh, man. That'd be horrible. Like you can't date anyone. You can't if the next girl you bring home takes your kidneys. That would be bad.
Yeah, you'd be pretty much shit out of luck there.
Dialysis, kidney dialysis. You need McCoy to bring you some pills.
I know. Was it the Dark Ages?
Regrow your kidneys.
Absolutely.
The bone special.
Oh, man. Anything else that we should talk about this episode before we get into strange territories, which we've already been getting into?
No. I think that's pretty good for this episode. I'm just so excited for how it's going to turn out. Next episode looks so much fun. Rainn Wilson was a brilliant as Harry Mudd in Choose Your Pain. I wish he had more screen time. I hope he's got a ton of screen time in the next episode. I love Rainn Wilson's portrayal of Harry Mudd. It's very good. It's very good.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's so much fun. I mean, geez.
Just the acting in this show is so top-notch across the board. Like, it's I love the modern budget. I love the modern special effects, the music, the cinematography. Everything about the show is top-notch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But it does look great. And the next episode, episode 7, is titled Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad.
Ooh. They're going fun. From, like, really short titles to really long ones and back.
Yeah, yeah. But looks fun. Looks awesome.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait. I can't wait. Harry Mudd. I need more Harry Mudd. So we've got 3 episodes left, right? So we've got next week is a Harry Mudd episode. Hopefully the week after that will be the Mirror episode. And then we've got the mid-season finale, which hopefully Lorca will give his grand plan so we can see what's going into the last couple episodes. Because I don't know if Lorca's going to make it out of the season alive. I hope he does, but he's such a bad person. I'm worried we're going to lose him in the first season. I hope not, but
I think we're going to lose him. I really do. I don't think he's lasting past season 1.
I got a feeling. I don't think he is either, but I think that's part of the arc the show's got to take. And the whole no one is safe thing. And we haven't lost anyone, since episode 4. So it'll be interesting. Like, we haven't lost anyone important since episode 4. So I'm wondering who's next in this, post Game of Thrones world where anyone can die at any moment.
I don't know, but I got a feeling that we're going to lose a couple people before this whole thing's up, and everyone's going to be crying when Tilly dies.
Oh, everyone's going to be crying when Tilly dies. Oh, I love Tilly. She's great.
She's awesome.
I'll probably cry harder when Lorca dies, though, because Lorca, man.
Not Lorca.
Not Lorca. He's my Section 31 Link that I love. Or seemingly so.
Seemingly so. Possibly.
Yeah, that's my theory. Don't rub it in my face too hard if he's not. But so many things are lining up.
I think Lorca's Garth of Isengard. So,
if he's Garth of Isengard, then he gets resurrected.
Yeah, but we might not see that because he has to go to this planet called Antos 4, which is has these like giant worms that are like energy controlling, and they supposed to use him, and they cellularly change him to after he's suffered an accident and he's maimed and dying. So I don't know. So if we hear Antos 4, maybe that's it, or there's another they call the Antosians call their world Dorophane. So if we hear any of those, we know that he's Garth of Isengard.
That'd be interesting. So he won't really die if he's Garth of Isengard. So, I guess that's the one little hope I have that the one little glimmer of him being Garth is that he'll be alive to Lorca another day. Although that'd be strange. That'd be strange, like Lorca to Garth of Izar. That's a weird name change.
Well, he's like Gandalf's the gray, Gandalf's the white, you know.
Yeah, but that's also a station.
I know. I'm just saying, like, you know, people change names.
Yeah, that's true. Interesting.
Things to think about.
Absolutely. Man, Star Trek Discovery has been such a great ride. Thank you for being on this ride with me, Aaron.
Oh, I'm enjoying this immensely. I'm glad we finally got to this point. We never thought this was even going to happen.
Yeah, this was like just a speck in our eye when we were starting the show. It's like, man, it wouldn't be great if a new Star Trek show happened while we were still podcasting. That would be so cool. And here it is.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, like, whoa, it's happening. We have a new show, and it's better than we thought it would be.
Absolutely. I mean, I know we were all kind of cautiously optimistic going in, and even after the first two episodes, cautiously optimistic. But after that, it's shot over any expectations I've had.
Yeah, so, for sure.
It's great. And anything, give us more. Oh, one thing I wanted to mention, like, are you concerned that we haven't seen a season two confirmation yet? It's something I talked about with Guy. I haven't talked to you about it yet.
Yeah, I have been wondering why we're not seeing anything on that front. I mean, if we don't hear anything by episode 9 during the break, I mean, then I'm going to start to worry. I mean, right now, maybe they're just trying to get people interested still in the show. But, I mean, come on. It's like,
I mean, if those impressions are right that I shared to the Facebook group, if this is like the most streamed show from the streaming platforms between, you know, Hulu, Netflix, and All Access, if those numbers are right and Star Trek is second or first, because there was two different ones, one showed it was first, one showed it second. If those are right, that's impressive. And I don't know why we haven't gotten a green light if those are correct.
Yeah, I don't know either. I don't. How can we not have one? I mean, how can it not be greenlit by this point? Maybe because they don't have it worked out yet. Maybe they don't have a story or plot figured out after that. I don't know.
I mean, from interviews I've seen with the producers and writers, they have an idea of where they want to go. They're waiting for the order for season two. They're waiting like we are.
Yeah.
They're just, I mean, from the little bit I've heard and, you know, the little interviews I've been seeing online, they're just in the same dark as we are. They're waiting from CBS for an order. And I'm wondering if they're waiting to see what the reaction is once Star Trek Discovery is off All Access. Like, if their numbers just dive. And I mean, like, what do you expect? I mean, that's the only show that people are watching that are Trekkies. I'm not watching anything else on All Access. I mean, I watch SEAL Team on All Access so I could do one of the new batch videos, but I'm not watching anything else on All Access.
Come on, you're not going to watch the rest of the SEAL Team?
No! It was not good. It was not good. If you want to see my full take on that, check out the Nerdonomicon's YouTube channel where I do an interesting review on it.
The last 4 seconds, 5 seconds is the best part of it. So
yeah, so stay tuned to the very end of that episode if you want to see something funny. It's my own. It's my own brand of humor.
Yeah, it is definitely Dave Duncan. Oh man!
All right, so you can find the show at Synthaholics.com. Our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at Warp11.com. Our intro is done by Dave Wilkes. You can join the Facebook group at facebook.com/group/Synthaholics. You can email us at Synthaholics@yahoo.com. We love reading your emails on the air. And if you have, if you don't want to type out an email, you send us an audio clip. We will play it on the air and respond to it. Especially since Star Trek Discovery is going on, let's get some Discovery conversations going. From what you guys are thinking, what are you guys thinking? Do you have any theories? Do you have any thoughts, hopes, dreams, predictions for what's coming up? Email us or send us a voice message at Synthaholics@yahoo.com.
Definitely do that. Hey, and if you have any money you can send our way, we can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/Synthaholics. It helps keep that one light on in our closet. That moth is still flying around our heads, looking to eat our clothing.
At any second.
any second. So if you want to keep that light bulb going, definitely throw a buck our way. Of course, the show is free and it will remain free. We just, if you have a little extra money that you could help out the show, we appreciate it. Also, if you have the time, we would greatly appreciate it if you go on to iTunes and you rate and review us, 5 stars preferably, and a nice thing said about us. Say nice things. You know, I would say nice things about you.
Exactly. We would love to say nice things about you, but we need an interaction so we can do that. So, emailing, joining the Facebook group, talking with us that way, even sending private messages to us. I like talking to people. I send private messages and I get private messages every now and then. So, I'd love to interact with as much you guys as possible, because that's part of why we did this, to find more people who are like us that love Star Trek, that want to talk about it. And that's why we have the group, and that's why we love talking about Star Trek with you guys every single week.
Absolutely. And hey, if you do know somebody else who is a big Star Trek fan or sci-fi fan or just looking for a new podcast, definitely direct them our way. Tell them to check out Synthaholics. You know, word of mouth is a wonderful way to get people interested into listening to our podcast.
Absolutely. And as far as other social media goes, you can find the show at Synthaholic Duo on Twitter. Personally, you can find me at David_J_Duncan on Twitter and on Instagram. I just made a Star Trek drink in honor of Star Trek Discovery, the Spore Drive shot. And it looks like the Spore Drive. It got sparkles flying around it. And it's made with Everclear, so it'll get you feeling just like Stamets does in these episodes. Oh, I had three shots of that before I started the show tonight.
Oh my god. Definitely you can check me out on Twitter at Blackbird2004. And hey, if, like I said in the beginning of the show, if you are interested, I have the graphic novel on the Kickstarter for Return to Snakeland. If you want to check that out, go to Kickstarter, do a quick search for Return to Snakeland, and you know, you can read all up about that and see the video and see what we have to offer for different types of perks if you want to donate to that.
And if you don't like reading and you want to listen, check out the Nerdonomicon's episode Snakeland and the episode on The Devil's Due, also about Snakeland, where Aaron is a guest on both of those.
Yay.
He gets around, round, round. He gets around.
Oh, boy, do I.
Well, thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.